The core of becoming work optional is not to stop working. It's to just shift what you work on. It's the permission to chase after what interests you, and it's the shift away from money and toward impact work. Welcome to the Becoming Work Optional podcast. I'm Rachel. With me is my co-host, Matt. And today's episode is all about helping you embrace the freedom that comes with becoming work optional so you can truly enjoy it. So our podcast is called Becoming Work Optional. So we talk a lot about getting to that point and what it takes to get to that point. But I think today we want to focus on a little bit more about what happens when you are there, when you are fully work optional, when you no longer need the paycheck, how to shift your mindset. Because for most of us, you know, we are in the mindset of having to work for money. We need a paycheck. We have bills to cover. But for a lot of the clients Matt and I work with, they've maybe had a big exit or have just been diligent savers and high earners and have gotten to the point where they truly don't need to work anymore. And an interesting phenomenon is that it's really hard to make that shift away from working so you continue to make money, continue to build up your nest egg, and towards maybe work that interests you more, but maybe doesn't have as much of a financial impact. So I think that is what we're going to talk about today in this episode, is how to shift your mindset more to the impact work.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, what comes along with making this shift, that I think a lot of people don't really realize as, you know, might be a hurdle for them, is shifting to a mindset of like, you go from saving everything and, you know, relying on a paycheck to now you're kind of like controlling the paycheck that comes to you based off of, you know, the withdrawals that you're making from investments. But a big part of that is the risk that you're now taking on, because, you know, you've always kind of thought of your income as a reliable, you know, source revenue stream, because you're working and like you always had that ability to go and earn money to support whatever it is that you wanted to do. And now you're shifting over to, well, I'm actually going to be working on things that are not really focused on money. And this goes a little bit hand in hand with what we'll talk about with clients when, you know, if they're going into like a traditional retirement where it's like, you know, what do you kind of have planned for retirement? What do you want to do? You know, I feel like most of the time, almost everyone says they want to travel and they want to spend time with family. But you know, what are the things that you're going to want to do that are going to like get you out of bed in the morning? Because there's going to come a time where, you know, you're not going to be traveling, backpacking across Europe, every day of your retirement. So you really need to figure out what it is that, you know, you're going to shift to when you reach work optional at like a younger age, you know, whether it's, you know, your 50s or your 40s, you're not going to be able to spend the rest of your years just kind of, kicking back on the beach. So really figuring out, you know, the work that is going to motivate you and what you're going to enjoy without having to kind of rely on or think of it in terms of, you know, what kind of monetary value it's going to bring in.
Yeah. Yeah. The people we work with are just, they are in this fortunate position of getting to that retirement, that freedom number, whatever you want to call it, getting to work optional status much earlier than your average person. So we're often seeing people in their 40s, 50s becoming fully work optional, no longer needing that paycheck. And that's great. But the downside of that is now you have this really long retirement, a lot of years left, where you're figuring out, okay, what do I want to do now? And the reason we call this work optional and really the philosophy behind it is not to stop working, but just to shift what you work on. And to take time to figure out what it is you really want to do and make revenue or the income coming in, bring it down the list of importance when deciding what you want to do. So there's different levels to this, of course. I like the work optional idea because you can start to think about it maybe even before you fully become work optional. There's different stages to it. So there's the stage of, okay, now I have a few years of cash saved. I can take a few years off and really go for that business that I want to. And then there's the next stage of, okay, now I'm savings optional, which is sometimes called Coast FI. That's where you've saved and invested enough. You still need to cover your living expenses, but you don't have to save anymore. and that nest egg should grow enough to get you to, you know, that traditional retirement age and take care of you. And then there's fully work optional. And this is, again, where your portfolio can support you and you can really go for what you want. So when we think about being at these different stages, we can kind of start to think about the shift to impact work. And depending on what I would say is your risk tolerance will inform when you can start to make that shift. Some people are comfortable starting to make more of a shift or really going for something when they have just even 3 months of cash or 2 years of cash. Some people want to get to that savings optional first, and then some people want to wait till they're fully work optional so they don't have to worry about money. But whenever you start to make that shift, I think there's a few questions you can ask yourself to figure out what you really want to do. One thing I'm always thinking about is just what work I would be proud to put out. You know, what work can I put out into the world that I'm proud to see my name next to? And I think when you're thinking about revenue and income and the paycheck, you don't have really the privilege of thinking like that. But when you get to work optional status, now you can think of, what do I want to see out there in the world with my name next to it?
Yeah. And I think that a great place to start when you're trying to think of, you know, what that is, you know, what are the things that you do already that you don't make or you don't do to make money that you're really doing out of enjoyment? And, you know, obviously like hobbies, like most hobbies are probably not going to fall under this umbrella of like things that you're going to do for impact work. But I think that if you really look deeper into like the, maybe like the reason that you enjoy a certain thing, a certain hobby, or you support a certain cause, that's really going to be able to kind of provide like a jumping off point of where you want to look at as far as what you could work on. I always like to kind of tie things together with personal examples. For me, my like work optional goal, or basically like if I were to get to a point where, you know, I didn't even have to think about, you know, money being a barrier to anything, like I absolutely love animals, specifically dogs. So like I've always wanted to have like do something involving dogs. Like when I was in college, I used to go to like the dog shelter and walk dogs for like my just like own enjoyment. And what I would love is to just have like a big like ranch or something where I could have a just like a no-kill shelter of dogs, which like I can only imagine like fathom the expenses and work that go into that. But like if I was to get to a point where I was able to like fund that and I can, you know, it fits into my lifestyle, like that's something that to me would really feel like I wasn't doing any kind of work at all, because it's literally something that I love and enjoy doing. So really looking at like, what are your interests and like, how do those tie down into like deeper values?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The more I think about money, surround myself with people who have money and then think about my own money as well, the more I'm convinced that the best thing you can do with it is help other people or other animals or help in some way. And when I speak with clients, a lot of them, especially people who are really good with money, it's hard for them to get out of that scarcity mindset of being like, well, you know, fully buying into the belief that they don't need to make money anymore. And now we can shift to, we've made the money, now what do we do with it? And so when I talk to them about how they want to help other people or the impact they want to make, they have those ideas there. Like, I think we all know how we would like to help other people or animals, but it's for many of the people I work with, it's not something that they really can see themselves doing. And you almost have to like walk through different exercises as far as you'll be fine if this happens and if this happens and if this happens. And it takes a lot for them to shift into, okay, don't need to make money anymore. Now I can actually start taking some of this money and seeing the impact that it can have on the world. That's a really, really difficult thing to do when you grow up with that scarcity mindset and you're locked into it. And it's the thing that got you to this point. You know, you have so much money and you did so well and you were so successful because you were so prudent with your money and you were so dedicated, committed, and you can still do that. A lot of the people I work with are hard workers. They love to, you know, create something, build something, see it come into the world. And I fully believe that they should continue doing that. But most of them, there are things they want to do that money is kind of getting in the way of, well, I would love to do this, but I don't see how that can make money. And I think it's really worth it to make that shift and to take the time that you need to remove money from the equation. It's not an easy shift to make, but for the people who I've seen do it, it's been really fulfilling for them. And if they've gotten to that other side, it just takes a little bit of pushing and a little bit of just, you know, internal work to really make that shift.
Yeah. And I, you know, the other thing that, that I always like to say is so valuable from like a financial planning perspective is really providing clarity and kind of helping people see opportunities or, you know, their own flexibility that they didn't know that they had.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not quite, you know, exactly what we're talking about today, but something that I see from a lot of clients is when they get to a point where they, you know, money is no longer, either they're not working or money isn't really a barrier for them. They want to help their kids like do things like weddings or help them with like a home down payment or other things where they're really getting to watch like their money do great things. Like it's not, they're not getting any kind of like material benefit from it or like buying anything that's supporting them, but just seeing the impact that they're able to have with their money, you know, by helping out their kids. And, you know, that's something that we see a lot of people want to do. And it doesn't quite tie into the kind of work optional impact work that we're talking about today. But I think it's a good example of seeing, you know, getting really fulfillment out of your money in a way that you wouldn't really expect, in a way that you've probably never thought about before, because you're always so hyper-focused on, you know, how is this money going to accumulate? And like, am I going to have enough?
No, I think that's a really good point, because with work optional status, we do start to think about fulfillment. And for a lot of people, their ultimate source of fulfillment is their children. So if that's what you want to start doing, where you want to start shifting some of your money toward your children, helping them, maybe helping them with a career, just helping them, you know, anyway, financially, I think that could be a really good thing to do when you start to shift to that work optional status. I also think it's worth thinking about some of the things you originally like to do, or some of what I call like your first loves. So something that I love to do, and I can remember doing it, you know, for as long as I can think back, is writing. And so when I think about my work optional status, I don't, you know, notoriously writers don't make a lot of money. So that's a big reason it didn't fully go in that direction. But I would certainly return to that, and I'm already starting to return to that. So I think about, what do I do, you know, for no source of money, and it's writing, and what's one of the first things that I love doing, and it was writing. So I think that's a good exercise too for some people if they're trying to remember what it is they like to do without money kind of soiling the thought process. Is what is one of the first things you can remember yourself doing? And then what do you already do now, maybe for enjoyment or just in your spare time? And also really important is maybe don't try to monetize it. That can sometimes ruin the process. We have some hobbies that, you know, maybe we could build into a business, and that would be really fun. I see people do that. It's really fulfilling to them. But for some people, I can see it ruin that hobby or that joy for them. So when it comes to like artistic expressions, sometimes we should protect that by not trying to monetize it and not trying to be really efficient and productive with it, but just making sure that we just enjoy it instead.
Yeah. So great example, actually. So my dad, like growing up, he always loved to work on engines. So he was a mechanic, like started off like as an auto mechanic, then transitioned over to like heavy machinery, like bulldozers and backhoes. And then he eventually, you know, so he became, I don't know, like a lead mechanic or whatever the title would have been, before he and his partner went out and started their business. So they started their business doing exactly that, you know, heavy machinery repair and sales. And the business took him away from what he actually really enjoyed doing. So he wasn't then doing the work on the engines and the things that really like stimulated him. He spent all day, every day on the phone, helping customers with problems. And he was never able to like as soon as he would start working on an engine or something, then like something would pull him away from it. So since he's retired, he has this shop, like, I don't know, 10 minutes away from their house. And he still wakes up, you know, a little bit later than he used to, but wakes up early every morning and goes out to that shop and he works on engines because that's what he loves to do. Like it's just, it stimulates him because it's a challenge and he gets to kind of see the result of, you know, this thing was broken and it didn't work and now it's working again, all from the effort and the time that I put into it. And he is as happy as he's ever been just being able to go and do that. And I think that's just a perfect example of like, obviously in those years where they had the business, you know, it was great and it provided a life for me, for my mom, my sisters, and for him, and it did what it was supposed to do. But the business, by actually turning it into, you know, something that was made to make money, took him away from what he was actually passionate about. So I think that that's a really good way of just kind of remembering that you, you know, if you get to this level of being able to not worry about money, you can actually go back to things that that you're passionate about, that you, and not have to worry about turning it into you know, source of revenue.
Yeah. I think it's, what's that book, The E-Myth, that talks about that quite a bit. People who love to do something, they turn it into a business and then they end up being a business owner and they completely drop doing the thing that they love to do. So a return to that can be really good for some people, but also there's a lot of people, again, that I work with that like just like building businesses. And I like to see them continue to do that. But maybe now they start to build businesses where it's like, well, I'm not so focused on an exit or building this so that it can sell. It's more just now the enjoyment of building the business and seeing the impact that it will have. There's a lot of people who now have that mindset of build a business, build it to sell, get the exit, and then kind of like go on to the next thing. And I think for some people, they really enjoy that. But for some people, they can get kind of stuck on that hamster wheel. And not realize that like they can get off and focus on other things. I think it's Naval Ravikant, who I love how he phrases it, where, you know, figure out how to get really good with money, figure out how to make money quickly, and then you can focus on the more important things in life. And now we know Naval is like this philosophical entrepreneur, because the route he took was get really good at making money, build that business, get the exit, but now do things that in his mind are more important and create space around, or leave space open to think about like the bigger things in life. And now we see Naval having this huge impact because of that path that he took. So I think that's why this is so important to me, is because there's so many entrepreneurs that I think can take the Naval route, but Naval got really good at shifting and starting to think about other things and started thinking about impact work, where some people can get stuck. And the thing I always refer to this, because I think it's just so smart, but it's when Warren Buffett talks about the internal versus the external scorecard. And most of us, without really realizing it, are on this path of trying to win the external scorecard, not realizing that that's not necessarily something that's important to us and that will fulfill us. So the external scorecard is things like money, status, fame. It's basically all the things that we are told should be important to us. And we spend our lives trying to win it. We spend our lives trying to get to a certain job title, having a certain identity, a certain amount of money. But the internal scorecard is what's important to you. And it might differ, probably does differ, with the external scorecard. It might not involve money, status, fame, things like that. But I do think there is something to, in the beginning of your career, getting really good with money, mastering it, getting it to that level, and then focusing as much as you can on winning your own internal scorecard. And part of the battle is just figuring out what is on your internal scorecard. So hard to go back to that.
Yeah. And one thing that, you know, I think that we've touched on this before, you know, where people say money doesn't buy happiness, and it doesn't by any means, but think about what money does give you, in the sense of, you're now able to think freely, and like have that creative freedom to do the things that you want to do. And that's really what I think opens the door to really doing massive things. When you think about, I think there's kind of a balance between a pressure of when you have to do something for money, you're motivated by the external factors, basically. But when you don't have to do something for money, you can really step back without having that pressure on you and take your time on things and really do the deep work and deep thinking of how you want to make things. I know that just in business in general, you know, if I'm running behind on doing like making content or something, it's really hard for me to get deep work done on the other parts of my business that are really important, because I just have that in the back of my mind of like, I'm on this hamster wheel that I have to continue running on to be able to you know, bring in new clients or things like that. And then when I'm caught up on those things and I can really take time to look up at my to-do list of like my long-term goals and say, oh, I wanted to redefine this onboarding process. Mm-hmm. Let me go back and do that now that I'm like caught up on things. And you can look at it and really like start to see the holes that you overlooked for so long. So, you know, when you extrapolate that out to not even really having to worry about money as the source of, you know, your support, that I think can really open the door for you to do things that you love, but do them on a scale that you probably never realized you were capable of.
Yeah. I think creativity is such an important point of this. Not to get deep, but I really think like what it to be human means to create. Like if I had to distinguish us from everything else, it would probably involve, you know, some aspect of creating. And that's why I think there's some frustration around AI and its impact and its role right now, because it's first thing it's done is it's entered the creative process. But I think most of us, if we were freed up from productivity and, you know, the 40-hour work week, we'd probably return to something that's creating. And I think people get confused because they see it as like a painting or poem or something like that. But creating can be just anything that doesn't exist in the world. You are going to bring it. You're going to build it. You're going to bring it into existence. So it could be a business, but you're looking at it from the perspective of just what do I wish existed but doesn't right now. That's all it really means to create. And I think a lot of us, if we had the free time and the space to think about it, we would return to that state of creating. And that's what I think is so different and important about the work optional movement, is because it's not a matter of like retiring and going and hanging out on a beach every day with a cocktail, which you could certainly do every once in a while. But I have the belief that most of us would continue to work, but it would be something that is more aligned with our personal beliefs and the way that we want to create. And again, just that very simple question of like, what does not exist that I wish did exist? And how can I bring that into the world? I think that's the point we all want to get to.
And I think we do these things on a very, on a small scale, you know, every day, whether it's no matter what your profession is. For me, it might be having the time to go and make like build this new Excel sheet that's going to shave hours off of, you know, my financial planning process. So, you know, it's creating things that that are going to make your life easier, that you enjoy doing. I love working with numbers and like typing up formulas and then, you know, putting that into action and seeing how much easier it makes my life, how much easier it is to show clients, you know, what's going on or how we came to a certain conclusion. So every day, you know, we're doing these things on a smaller, or we want to be doing these things on a smaller scale, and then not having the limitation or the pressure of having to do it for money really opens the door to do it on a big scale and a way that we want to make the change that, you know, we want to see, kind of whether it's in the world or just in our lives in general.
Yeah. I think a really important part of the shift too is to break out of like these, I don't say constructs, but like time constructs, right? Like the 40-hour work week, the 9 to 5, and then the weekends. And so where I see a lot of people get stuck is, you know, that's our career. That's how we have spent our entire adult lives, is in that time construct. And one way to start making the shift to what you really want to do, what you really want to work on, is just start to challenge that. Figure out, when do I want to work? What does my working day look like? do I want to work on a Saturday? Maybe not on a Monday. Just challenging those things can break you out of that rut and allow you to be more creative to start to figure out what you really want your life to look like. I find it so interesting when I ask clients like what they want their ideal day to look like, that sometimes they still follow that traditional 9-to-5 pattern. So I think it's really important to challenge yourself, like completely eliminate the 9-to-5, the 40-hour work week. How would you work? Some people would work at night. Some people would take naps during the day. Some people would take a walk. Like there's different ways in which we all thrive when we work. And so I think such an important part of this process is to figure out your schedule, your circadian rhythm, not adapt to what's been set out for us.
Yeah. And I can be the first one to attest that it's easier said than done, yeah. Especially because, you know, you're not just depending on, you know, your profession, you know, for us, you know, we have to be, you know, basically there for clients when they need our help. And we need to be able to see what's going on in the market, if we need to, you know, make trades to generate cash or something for clients. So, you know, we have a little bit more of a limitation as far as, you know, what days we can just say like, we're not going to work on Monday, but we're going to work. But at the same time, you know, you have those, the kind of the flexibility to work on a different schedule. You know, if I did want to take a Friday off or something, as long as no clients reached out to me or something, I can just replace that Friday with Sunday. And yeah, it's not easy to break out of that traditional rhythm that we've been accustomed to. But when you have a taste of it, I think it's really, really eye-opening to see how we are limited by it and how much we kind of rely on that.
Yeah. Well, and I can't remember the analogy, something like work like a lion or something, where that's more in line with human nature, where you sprint, rest, sprint, rest. It's like deep focus and then rest. And, you know, we treat ourselves like machines sometimes. Like, I'm just going to turn on this productivity machine from 9-to-5, when we really can't maintain productivity through those hours or perfect productivity. So it would make more sense to work with what's more natural to us, which is that like deep focus, rest or reset, deep focus, rest, reset. Of course, like, you know, we don't all have the privilege of being able to do that, especially when you have a job that we need to be awake and be there during market hours. But for clients who have achieved work optional status and they truly can figure out what to do with their day, that would be one of the first things I work focus on, is shifting towards a working method that is more natural to you, because you will get so much more done. When I've worked like that, you know, sprint, rest, I am amazed by my productivity versus when I had like a traditional 9-to-5 job. And like, yes, technically I was sitting there in front of a computer for that many hours, 8+ hours, but I was productive, I don't know, for half of them or something like that, you know, just,
yeah,
it didn't really make sense from a productivity standpoint even.
Oh yeah. Don't even get me started on how that was. I mean, you know, I would say like, I don't think I was built for like the 9-to-5, because I just couldn't, you know, if I'm sitting there and I just simply like my brain's done for the day, I just hated the idea of having to basically sit at the computer and kind of be a vegetable for the rest of the day until it was acceptable for me to go home.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is like, you know, you run into that all the time. I find myself be really productive for a couple hours or something, and then I tell myself like, oh, you're on this roll, like you got to stay here. And then I realize that if I looked back over the last 2 hours, like if I try to push myself and then I look back 2 hours after, I'm like, I didn't accomplish anything because I lost like my focus, like I burnt myself out. So being able to kind of reset, go and, you know, take a walk, go outside, see some sunlight, whatever it is so helpful for you to be able to get back into a rhythm and really use those productive hours to the best of your ability.
Yeah. And I think it was like an old Tim Ferriss episode or something I listened to, where he talked about sleeping for like 7.5 hours at night, working for 6 to 7 hours, taking a nap at some point at like 3 p.m., like a 90-minute nap. And then he has the energy to like do another full day's work if he wants to, because it just rejuvenates him. So obviously he's in the position to be able to do that. A lot of people who haven't hit work optional status yet are not in that position. But what we see over and over again is hitting that work optional status and then not being able to break out of that construct. And so if we really want to shift towards owning our days, doing whatever we want to do, then we have to start, I think, challenging almost everything about our lives.
Yeah. So that's going to be, it's going to be it for today. Really, really hope that you enjoy this episode. And if you're in the position or nearing the time in your life where you could be entering work optional status, we really hope that this kind of helps you think through that and make that transition. So as always, thank you for listening. We'd really appreciate subscription or rating on whatever platform you're listening or watching on. So you can find me at on Twitter, Instagram, any other social platform at Matthew_Garrisick, or my business website, unrivaledwm.com. And Rachel, what about you?
Yeah, rachelcampwealth.com is my business website, camp_wealth on Twitter, Camp Wealth pretty much everywhere else. See you guys next time.
See ya.
Like the disclosures say in the bio of this podcast, this content is strictly for educational and informational purposes. And because everyone's situation is unique, you should consult with the appropriate professional before enacting any of the information you may hear in this podcast. You should not construe any such information or material as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. This content is provided as is, and although the material is believed to be accurate, no representations are made that the content is error-free.